The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another edition of the UAB Director's Chair. We call it that because he is the athletic director for your UAB Blazers, Mark Ingram. He is out of town right now. Can I say where you're at?
Sure.
You're down in beautiful Florida right now?
I am in sunny Florida.
All right. We won't say why, but you're down there doing some covert operation down there. We'll just put it that way.
I have a covert operation in Florida, yes.
We're going to talk about
I'm excited about, but yes, covert nonetheless.
There you go. Go to UAB underscore AD, and you can check out Mark Ingram on his Twitter account. He will reply to you, as he does to a lot of people that are obviously are UAB fans. And you can listen to the show on TKR at least 5 days a week. We play it at least five times, and of course, then it lives in infamy. On our podcast series, the minute it airs live here on Tony Curry Radio, you can pick it up wherever you get your favorite podcast, the Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. That's Curry with a K, K-U-R-R-E. It's one of our most listened to shows every single week. One of the reasons it probably is we not only talk about UAB sports, we talk about college sports in general. We'll talk about the college football playoff. The schedule came out yesterday, which is super exciting. And also, we talk some classic rock. And this week, I let you pick the topic, and you wanted to do our four favorite concerts. Any genre, correct? Any genre?
Anything, yeah. All anybody right. that you've seen that you think is just fantastic.
Okay, we'll get into that a little bit later on in the show. First of all, I'll start with UAB. What's going on in the world of UAB athletics? I just go to UABsports.com, and all I see is winner, winner, chicken dinner. It seems like every sport you have is winning competitions right now. But what's going on in the UAB world of sports?
Yeah, we're wrapping up our outdoor track season, and our baseball season has a couple of more weeks before conference tournament. And softball, your Mighty Blazers softball team under first-year head coach A.J. Doherty is currently a half game up and in first place in Conference USA ahead of Charlotte. And we play at Charlotte this weekend. So going to be a really tough test for our team, but a tough test for Charlotte too, I might add. And so I'm excited. I mean, this basically determines the regular season conference champion and the series, and then you got Florida Atlantic and North Texas right on our heels as well in third and fourth. So and Louisiana Tech, excuse me, they're right in there too. So it's the top five are a really tight bunch. But your Mighty Blazers are sitting at the top of that tight bunch. So it's exciting.
I love that. That's great. Anything else going on in the world of sports that we don't know about? The bowling team, rifle, whatever. Anything else that we normally don't talk about?
Yeah, man. Well, we've closed everything else out. We just had 87 graduates last Friday, which is exciting. That's a bigger than usual number, and it's related to the pandemic and the NCAA allowing student athletes to stay longer. And so we had kids do that, some of which stayed and got a second degree or a double major, you know, extended their undergrad to get a double major, or they went to graduate school and got a master's degree. I mean, Jordan Walker, who's a Tulane graduate, came here and graduated again with a master's degree. So here's a guy that's player of the year his junior year with us and is only probably because of a five-game injury his senior season this past year was he not the two-time player of the year. And this guy's got a degree and a master's degree. So, you know, we're really proud of how all of them do in the classroom. We really excel in that area and are proud of it.
Yeah, it's amazing because you don't hear about athletes getting master's degrees. I mean, that's just wonderful. And you know, we certainly heard early about the Bo Jacksons of the world who come back and get their degrees later on because they promised their mama 20 years earlier. But
yeah,
it's super cool. And let's be honest here, less than 1% of all college athletes that play at another level or a higher level, and those degrees are super important. So kudos to UAB and giving them that platform to not only get their degrees, but also, in some cases, their master's degree. He's Mark Ingram, the athletic director for the UAB Blazers. You can check the show out every single week five times on the TKR app. Download that app like 100,000 folks have already done. Of course, listen to us on the Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. We're available everywhere. We'll talk about our four favorite concerts coming up in a minute. Yesterday, it was Nirvana for not only college football fans, but also NFL football fans. The college football playoff schedule came out. And Thursday, January 9th, and of course, this will be coming up in 2025. We got one more year of college football as we know it before we get into the 2024-2025 expansion to 12 teams. But it's going to be five straight days of CFP semifinals and or NFL playoff games, the 9th to the 13th of 2025. Pretty exciting stuff. But your initial thoughts, let's back it up a little bit. We've gone through the BCS, we've gone through the playoffs, we've done all these different things. When you first heard that they were going to expand the college football playoff system, what were your initial thoughts? We went from four to what did you think they should have expanded to? And then when you heard about the 12, how'd that make you feel as an athletic director?
Okay, so let me start by saying that I liked the BCS formula. One of the things that I liked about it was it did not rely on people to make decisions. People are biased, even as hard as we try not to be. We just are. And we like certain teams from our childhood. We like certain school colors. We like certain coaches that, for whatever reason, you know, said hello to us passing in an airport once. And, you know, and we're just, anyway, we're human. And so one of the things I like about the BCS is it took that human element, and I cannot think of a time in its 10 or 15, however long it went, 10 or 15 year run, I can't think of a time when the champion that any of us said, you know what, I don't think they're the champion. I think every single time we got it right. And so I wasn't opposed to that system because I think, I don't know if I'm in the majority or the minority, but I think majority, I'm a fan of the bowls, of the bowl games, the 6-16 that goes to a bowl game, good for them. Because I've been in those locker rooms when kids get to win number six somewhere in the middle or end of the season, and it's like they feel like they won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And then I've also been in the team meeting room when a team gets to six, they think they're going. They had that jubilant reaction in the locker room after the win. They're so excited they're going to go somewhere in December and play another game with their brothers, you know, and then they don't get invited. And I've been in that team meeting room where we've had to say, you've worked so hard, and I'm just so sorry, but we've not received an invitation, and we're not going to a bowl game. And it's as low. Those are two extremes, man. You're as high, and as low as a team in that moment. And so having been a part of both of those things, that's why I'm such a great proponent of the bowl game system. And the national media who kind of beats it up, and they love to talk about these that's their favorite phrase, this meaningless bowl games. Well, they're only meaningless to that person writing that story. They're not meaningless to those players, and they're not meaningless to those fans that whose team, you know, hadn't been to a bowl game. So look at us. We had not been to we had been to one bowl game in our whole career. And then in 17, we get invited to the Bahamas Bowl. And I'm telling you, the kids in the locker room there at Legion Field, when we came off the field, you thought we won the national title. And so that's why it's important, is it's a momentum shifter for your fan base. But to get to your question, you know, I've enjoyed the college football playoff. I was a little concerned when it started that, you know, the sport of football is constantly under fire because it's an easy target. One, because it's so popular, and two, because, you know, there's going to be probably an injury every game on one of the two teams, if not both. And, you know, concussion conversations and all this kind of thing. Various other injuries that people enjoy pointing out. So, you know, sort of the naysayer groups. And so I was a little worried about the CFP only because it extends the season for those four teams. And if you think about it, really it only extends the season by one game for two teams.
Sure.
Because you play the first round, which is basically your bowl game, and then the winner advances. So it's really only an extra game for two teams. And that was one of the things that I thought there'd be more discussion about on the expansion, but there was discussion, but it was not a negative one, and it was all positive reaction by people that talked about it. And I'm thrilled because, again, I think we ought to expand the NCAA basketball tournament. I think it ought to be double the field.
Yeah.
I think it ought to be 128. It's only – think of this. If you go from 64, and I know you have the four play-in, but let's remove the four play-in. If you just think it's 64, if you double that to 128, that's still only a third of the teams that are in this country playing Division I basketball, a third. And it's only one more game. It's one more basketball game. It's one more round. I think that would make it so much more interesting because you watch the tournament and it's teams like Florida Atlantic getting to the Final Four, and San Diego State, and the St. Peter's Peacocks, and Villanova, and Butler, and Loyola Chicago. That's what makes the tournament so incredible, because these are really good basketball teams. They just don't get as much television coverage, and so you don't know about them when you're watching during the season, and then poof, they show up at the tournament, and they're lights out good, man. They're really, really talented.
Well,
that's what I think you get with an expanded playoff.
Let me ask you this.
12.
Yeah, I mean, I I'm with you on it, and I don't see anyone fighting an expansion in college hoops. And of course, we were talking about college football, but you bring up a great point. This is the NCAA's cash cow. Why wouldn't they expand, and why aren't we talking about that?
Yeah, I mean, there's always chatter about it, but there's not any real strong movement for it. I don't know. You get varying degrees of response on that. Some think that it waters it down, you know, make it less meaningful. I just disagree. You know, that doesn't make me right. It's just my opinion.
Yeah.
I just disagree. And I point to those opportunities for those other teams to get in. You look at North Texas and UAB this year, who play in the NIT championship. Charlotte wins the CBI championship. We were all capable. If you expand, if you double the field, we're all in it.
Yeah.
And would be competitive. Now, do we go to the Final Four? I don't know. But I just think that's what makes it interesting and exciting. And so, to come back, as a long answer to your question, which is about the expanded college football playoff, which I'm thrilled about, because it gives more opportunities for people on the, on the fringe to get in. And the group of five now, which I hate that designation, but, you know, the highest ranked team from the group of five gets in. So we at least have a chance.
No,
you know, Danny White, who's the former AD at Central Florida, now at Tennessee. I don't hear Danny talking about it as much. He's at Tennessee. But when he was at Central Florida, he used to call it the College Football Invitational.
Yeah.
He said, this is not a tournament. This is not a playoff. It's an invitational. And he's not wrong.
You're spot on. And for people that make the argument, well, you know, why are we having a 12-team playoff? Because the 12 team's never going to win a national title. To me, it doesn't really matter. First of all, you are talking about an influx of cash coming into these universities, which is super important for a lot of different reasons. And second of all, when you're talking about a team, listen, ask Nick Saban about playing La Monroe's first year. You got to play the game, and there's a reason why you play that game.
Yep.
And you can't look past anybody. And even if you do win that game, you are throwing the injury aspect into it. You're throwing in a statistical apparatus into the whole. You still have to play that extra game. And yes, there is the possibility that you'll have a team like an FAU that gets incredibly hot. And can really disrupt the entire system. So here's how it's going to look. You get a 12-team format, and it's really interesting. The top four conference champions get the bye. Then you have a combination of the top six at-large bids and two highest-ranked remaining conference champions. The teams will be ordered based on the college football playoff rankings, which is fine. That guarantees, like you just said, at least one group of five team will make the playoff. The one thing that I think is really strange, too, is the fact that the approved format means like independent teams like Notre Dame, Army, UConn, UMass, not to say they make it in any way, but Notre Dame certainly could. They will never be among those top four teams to get a bye. That makes you wonder if perhaps Notre Dame's hand will be forced just a little bit to maybe join that ACC finally and be in something. And then, of course, the top four teams have the bye with seeds 5-8 hosting home playoff games, which I think is fantastic for college football. You'll have another campus game. And then I think, which is really cool, the number one team gets to choose where it wants to play its opponent in the quarterfinals, followed by the 2, 3, and 4. Do you like the way it's playing out?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, again, you said it very well. You've got to play the game.
Yeah.
And when you start worrying about, we're going to be closer to their fan base and that's an unfair advantage. And, I mean, I've never seen a fan play on the field. I've just never seen that. Now, maybe that's happened in a game that I never saw. But, you know, it's your best against our best on the field. And let's go play, man. Quit making excuses and wondering about, is it going to be hot or cold or raining or inside or outside or too loud or not loud enough? I mean, man, just suit up.
Yeah.
Just suit up. So I'm thrilled to have the opportunity. And I think just like in the NCAA basketball tournament, what keeps some of us out, some of these teams that have been in, they know there's good football teams out there that are basically blocked out. Who they now may have to play, and so they're a little worried about it. You know, there's some concern, The number 12 football team in the country is not bad. They're not bad.
Yep. There you go. He's Mark Ingram, athletic director for the UAB Blazers, at UAB_AD on Twitter. You can go to UABsports.com for all the information, what's going on for tickets and everything else that goes on in athletics, and great to college football talk as well. We got one more year to get through, and then we'll kick off a 12-team playoff. It's going to be fantastic. All right, so something we do every single week. We've done our best guitar players, our front men. We've done our Mount Rushmore thing. You came up with the brilliant idea of doing our top four concerts, any genre that we've seen, that we were impressed by. We'll get into that. And I know that every single week we could do an honorable mention show. You have honorable mentions. Let's start with your honorable mentions. I'll give you mine, then we'll give you your first concert. What you got?
Yeah, so I don't want to be too long-winded, but I got a few. So I was working at Temple University, and I'd been there for a couple of weeks. And Daryl Hall and John Oates went to Temple University. Isn't that funny?
Oh, yeah.
And John Oates agreed to do this private concert for a very small donor group. And there was one seat, and I was new, and they felt pity. And why don't you invite your new fundraiser from athletics? And so I go to this concert. And to call it a concert, Tony, is like, I'm not kidding you. It was like being in a basement of this beautiful, beautiful historic building, and we're down in the basement about the size of probably your basement at your house.
Yeah.
And it's John Oates and a guitar.
Wow.
And like 50 of us. And he was just fantastic. He sounded great. You know, he played everything you hoped he would play. You know, at one point, you know, he said something like, you know, I don't know how much time we've got. I got a few more. I said, you got 5 hours, John. That's all you got. And, you know, but he's like, we were talking to him as if he, like, imagine your neighbor just choosing to play guitar in your basement one night. It was so
nice.
Fun.
That is
so
killer.
Fun. Give me one of yours.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where when I sat down, it started flowing out of me. I got a chance to bring on almost every single group that I'm mentioning, and that certainly added a very personal touch to every show, because when you're bringing a band on, they sound better in concert. They just do. But the Edgar Winter group was a band I brought on City Stages. They opened up for Jethro Tull. I got a chance to hang out with Ian Anderson for a period of time, which is unbelievable. I brought on Arlo Guthrie. I think I've shared the story. He got stoned as a rat for about an hour and a half before the show that started at noon on a Sunday on the Blockbuster stage. I don't know how he played through it.
It's never too early.
And I was not a smoker, but the secondary smoke, I don't remember bringing him on, which was great. Bo Diddley was the first act I ever brought on stage here and just asked me to say diddly. He just said, and I said, what do you want me to say? He's like,
just say diddly.
Don't say anything but diddly. And I did. They went crazy. Saw Taylor Hicks out in Las Vegas. His first year, he played out there after he won American Idol and was out there with my brother and my dad. And we sat right in the front row. It was probably one of the most wonderful shows. George Benson was another one of those shows that I saw when I was in high school that I absolutely loved. James Taylor, I've seen him a million times, but he didn't make my top four. I've seen Robert Plant. I brought Stevie Ray Vaughan on stage with Joe Cocker a month before he died in the helicopter crash. So yeah, there's just a ton of different honorable mention shows, and I know you've got some other honorable mentions, but those are mine. What else do you have?
Yeah, you know, I saw Rod Stewart in Atlanta, and he played in the round.
Oh, nice.
Rod Stewart was just fabulous. He sounded great. There's something about that stage setting that I think is a ton of fun. And my wife and I were fairly low, and just felt like we could really see him and connect with him. And he did a great job of connecting with the audience. I saw George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars, and George Clinton had, I'm telling you, 30 people on a stage that should have held five. And he had this one guy wandering around. He looked to be about 60 years old, wearing a diaper, and he's just wandering around. He's just wandering around, and they're just all. It was just so weird, and everybody there was just waiting for him to play Flashlight, and he finally did, and then it was over. But it was really fun, and it was like this 2-hour jam session, and somewhere they squoze in Flashlight, which was just funny. You know, I know you said that Jimmy Buffett wasn't friendly to you, which I hate to hear because he seems like a friendly guy.
Yeah.
And he does give a great concert if you ever, you know, see him. And especially if you can see him outside. He's a big production. And I think you said this in our last show, is that while he hadn't been friendly to you, but he does do a great job connecting with the audience. you mentioned Robert Plant. So I saw Led Zeppelin play, and they brought a 30-piece Egyptian orchestra with them as part of their accompaniment.
Oh, wow.
And most of it was percussion. Like, seriously, I bet 20 of the 30 were percussion, and then some other stringed instruments that I'd never seen before. And it was just created such a wild sound and a really big sound.
Yeah.
You know, really full, deep, rich sound, which I enjoyed as part of that show. Aerosmith, I've seen a couple of times, and I told you my story last time about them. And you said, anytime you bring somebody out, it's going to make you love the show. And that was part of my deal, having met them before the show, and that whole autograph thing with the jersey made me love them. I'll give you three more quick ones. I saw Guns N' Roses 4 years ago in Nashville. They did a reunion show, and it sounded like they were in studio back in the 90s.
Wow.
They were on point. They were crystal clear. They looked great. They sounded great. And different, you know, talk about connecting with the audience. They hardly spoke at all.
Yeah.
Axl Rose maybe said, "What up, Nashville?" or something. That might have been it. I'm not even certain he did that. And even Steven Adler, their drummer, who has debilitated himself with drug use, he came back and played a couple of tunes with them. So that was really cool to see him, and good for him for being able to, you know, rehabilitate himself to the best of his ability. Mm-hmm. And be healthy enough to be there. I thought, you know, kudos to him for that. But man, they rocked for 2.5 hours, man. And my buddy, they were supposed to go on at like, I think 9 o'clock, or we weren't sure. They're supposed to go on anyway. And my buddy was like, man, there's no way they're going to be late. No way they're going to be. And another friend was like, oh, they're definitely going to be late. We may not even see these guys tonight. You know, but they came on. They didn't come on at 9:01, man. They came on at precisely 9 o'clock.
Wow.
And they went at it for 2.5 hours. It was just so fun to see them play every single song in their catalog that you ever loved. And my last two, which are very different genre, but just fabulous, Taylor Swift. I took my daughter to see Taylor Swift, and you want to talk about a production, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I mean, this young lady, I'm so impressed by her. She writes all of her own music. She performs all of her own music. She sings all of her own music. She's playing multiple instruments. And then kind of like Cher, she's wardrobe changes, and she's flying across the audience on a cable to another stage. And, I mean, it was really big. I saw her over at the Mercedes Dome in Atlanta. And, boy, she was really fantastic. And my daughter loves her. And I thought, well, you know, I like her and I respected her. But after seeing that, I was like, man, this young lady has figured it out. And she's really got a special show. And it was packed. And she did like three straight nights in a place like that. It tells you how popular she is.
Yeah.
No, and the last one I'll give you on honorable mention, I took my wife to see Justin Timberlake. Man, that dude is great. Great. And similar to her, big production, big band accompaniment. The guy can dance, he can sing, he played guitar, he played piano, and he didn't just play all of his boy, you know, he played some of his boy band stuff, and then of course he went solo, but then like he played a couple of Michael Jackson songs because he was a Michael Jackson fan growing up. And then he's from Memphis, and he played a couple of Elvis songs.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it was just really a wide variety and super talented guy, and he was engaging and funny. He told some jokes that were really funny, and anyway, just a lot of fun. So that's my honorable mention category.
You know what's super cool too is back in our day, you never heard a band do a cover song unless, of course, it was, you know, recorded by that band, like a Van Halen song playing "Pretty Woman." You never heard that now. You know, you go to a Heart concert and half their stuff is Zeppelin. It's great. And you brought up you brought up several bands. Guns N' Roses, the Birmingham Racecourse was maybe not. I could certainly make it one of my top four shows just by everything that went on. I'll never forget the band was playing out there. Of course, it rained like hell that night, and the next morning I had to go out there and clean up, and there were about 6,000 pairs of red pumps that were stuck in the mud because the women just walked off. But there was horse racing going on during the concert, And the horses were getting spooked coming out of turn four, which is where the stage was. If you look at the Birmingham race course, it was off to the left-hand side. And long shot after long shot after long shot was winning. And so they asked the band if they would play 15 minutes, stop for 10 minutes, and then play 15 minutes and stop for 10 minutes. Well, you know how that went over with Axl Rose. He's like, you're crazy, because it was messing up the horses. So that was one. And then I'll bring up one other one, and you mentioned Jimmy Buffett, and he's going to be one of my four shows. But my senior year, we used to have senior concerts. I don't know if they do that here. I know they do it at colleges. Jimmy Buffett actually played for the University of Alabama's senior night. But they did a concert at Timberwolf Amphitheater up in Cincinnati, which you know very, very well, at Kings Island Amusement Park, which is now Paramount Park. Yep. And the Little River Band was our senior concert. And everyone just thought it was super lame. This was 1984. And I forget the singer's name, totally blew my socks off. I wasn't a big Little River Band fan, but to hear Reminiscing and Happy Anniversary, it just changed my life. But that's going to kick me off into my fourth concert, and that would be Jimmy Buffett.
Hold on.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I'm so impressed that you're going to say that Jimmy's one of yours, because you said that he wasn't friendly to you. So good for you for being able to look past that. But you brought up the GNR story. I'm gonna tell you another story. Can I do that real fast?
Sure, yeah.
So we go to this concert. It's me and three of my college buddies, and we just don't get together very often. And two of them live in Nashville, and one lives in Charlotte. And so we're going to go to this show. And, of course, my buddy from Charlotte, who I love dearly, he bails out. And so we because he's in Charlotte. So we end up taking one of my college friend's brother. Anyway, I had gotten the tickets and they're waiting at will call. And we had this great idea. Let's go early. As soon as the ticket office opens, let's go get the tickets. Let's go get the tickets. And then we can go hang out somewhere downtown Nashville, and we'll come back to the show. But we'll avoid this line. And they're in my name. So they let me off. Well, you can't get anywhere near the stadium. So I got to walk all the way across this parking lot. And I say all the way, it felt like 300 yards, three football fields. Mm-hmm. I get there. And get the tickets, and there's one of these pop-up t-shirt stands, like a food truck kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think, oh, this is hilarious. Like, I've never bought a concert t-shirt in my life. Not really. And I think they're cool or whatever. I just had never done it. But I'm like, oh, this will just be funny. So I just very quickly, I go, give me a large, give me a double extra large on this one. Give me a two XLs in this one and an XL. And so I grab them real fast, and I come back. And I get to the car, and I'm like, hey, we got t-shirts with the tickets. And they're like, what? And I bought four different ones. Well, I just stuffed mine kind of down in the seat. I really didn't even look at it.
Yeah.
Well, again, telling you about the time of your life, my buddy lives in Franklin at a place called The Square, which is this charming little place. And so we're going to go to the Guns N' Roses concert at night, and we're going to brunch the next day. So the next day, I think, oh, this will be funny. I'm going to wear my concert t-shirt to brunch.
Yeah.
And they're it's got the Appetite for Destruction on the logo, the album cover on the front, and I never looked at the back. Well, the name of the tour was called Not in This Lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just assumed, I don't know what I thought. I'm putting the shirt on, and let's just say in an effort to keep it PG, this is what the shirt says. It says, Not in This Lifetime, Mother Effer. And I'm like, you're kidding. And it's all spelled out.
And you're wearing it to brunch.
I can't even mow the grass in this shirt. What am I going to do with this overpriced $40 t-shirt?
Awesome.
I can't wear that shirt. But I loved it. I couldn't wear it.
Man, that's what we did, right? We got the jerseys. You just don't see the concert jerseys. And you'd wear it at the show. And then you the next day you went to school because you wanted all your buddies to know you went to the concert the night before.
Where was I?
And it didn't matter how bad it stunk. It didn't matter whether it had stuff spilled on it. You wore the jersey. So I'm going to take us back to Timberwolf 1984. And I was actually working at Kings Island in the, I was Scooby-Doo for a year, and then I got fired. And then I came back and worked in the money room because my sister had a job there, and I got in. I went down the water flume in the Scooby-Doo outfit and almost drowned a family of four. And so I got fired for it. But anyway, so I'm at the Jimmy Buffett concert, and this is when Jimmy was nobody. He had come Monday. He had Margaritaville. That was it. And it was 1984. And I don't know why it was in Cincinnati. I don't know what happened that particular night, but it was sold out. There were 6,000 people in a 4,000 seat, Timberwolf amphitheater outside, the park. And Jimmy came on stage. And this is not one of my favorite concerts, but I will say it's one of my four most impressionable because it catapulted his career to something that, I mean, now he's got Margaritaville retirement villages, right? And he's got Margaritaville bars. The guy's worth billions of dollars. He walked out on stage and he actually thought that maybe someone else was playing that night. He came out and he just stood there and you could tell he was just amazed by the fact that he was playing in front of 300 or 400 people. And there were 6,000 people there for a Jimmy Buffett concert. Yeah. And I don't know if it was just a beautiful day. Maybe people at the park were like, yeah, we're here. Let's just go see the concert. He got up there and truly thought that there was another band playing after him. And he was it. And that catapulted him from that point on. Next thing you know, 3 years later, he's playing 5 sold out nights at Riverbend Music Center doing the Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday thing. And just, I mean, he just took off and everyone in the world knew. And he still loves Cincinnati for that purpose. So I'm going to start with Jimmy Buffett at Timberwolf back in 1984. What's your number four?
Well, that is a great one. And Jimmy, you're right. He's done those Riverbend shows forever. He's just got this. There's something about Cincinnati, and it must be that. That's great.
It is.
These are not in a particular order, okay? I'm going to give you four great ones. I have talked about this one before in some of our other shows. You know, I was a guy that I would say that I liked the band Kiss until I went to their concert, full makeup, and I was just jaw-dropped by it. I mean, anybody that has not seen that show, they've got parts of the stage that kind of it's like a telescopic stage that comes out over the crowd and back. And they've got, you know, Gene Simmons hooks up to cables and flies through the air and he breathes fire and he's got this whole thing that his character is the demon and he's, you know, blood's pouring out of his mouth on one song. And you can say that it's gross or weird or it's whatever. I don't know what it is, but it's awesome.
Yeah.
And they got fire and fireworks and they figured it out. They figured out in the 70s, Kiss Alive 1, in that tour, they started, and they have never stopped this. They start every show. They play every show the same. I think the what they say between songs is identical.
Mm-hmm.
I think for them, it's probably monotonous and boring, but they figured it out. They figured out a formula of the their set list and what comes first. And when you're standing there, and you're waiting on the show to start. You're in the arena, and the lights are on, and you know that moment when the lights go off, and your heart kind of drops, and you go, oh God, you know that second, and you're like, oh my gosh, here it is, and then you just hear this voice, and it's the same voice, it's the same recorded guy, and he goes, you wanted the best, and you got the best, the hottest band in the world. Yeah,
isn't that great?
And then they go, and then they go Detroit Rock City, and whoo, and it's just like a smack in the face, bang, wake up, and it's just such a fantastic start to that concert. And I've seen them twice now, in the makeup, and just it's awesome.
They're still
awesome
on the road. They're still doing the show. I'm gonna go with my number three. I got a chance to bring Def Leppard on for their Adrenalize concert at the BJCC. It was so loud, it was almost muddy. I remember from a technical standpoint, it wasn't one of the best shows I've ever seen. But I'm doing my show outside the gate, and Joe Elliott came up to do the show with me about 6 o'clock, and they were going to go on stage at 8. And he gave me 6 backstage passes, and so and there was only 6. And he's like, give these to the 6 best looking Alabama women you could find. And, and he goes, I want no guys. It's got to be 6 women. He goes, I know you're a rock jock here. I know everyone loves you. And so I'm sure you could find 6 beautiful women. And it was in the round, just like you mentioned, which is just a wonderful way to see a concert. The issue with being in the round is if you go backstage before the concert, you can't leave. So he's like, make sure you tell these 6 women, whoever these 6 women are, that they're going to be underneath the stage for the entire show, and they can't leave until after the show's over. And I said, that's fine. So obviously I found 6 beautiful women. I went backstage with them. I was underneath the stage.
It's a tough task.
Yeah, it really is. And boy, it's a different sounding show when you're underneath. Maybe that's why it kind of sounded muddy. So underneath the stage, in case people don't know, there are tables. The ceiling is pretty low. But there are tables and it's catered in the whole 9 yards. And so I've got these 6 women, 2 of them were school teachers. There was a lawyer and I don't know what the other 3 did. And they play a song called Rocket. And it's about 13, 14, 15 minutes long. And if you've ever seen Def Leppard, what I'm talking about, they take turns leaving the stage one at a time to go down to either change their clothes, get refreshed, rehydrated, whatever. And then they go back up and then the next guy comes down. And that's why it lasts about 13 minutes. This is a family show. What I saw underneath the stage in the round at that Def Leppard concert was one of the most incredible, deplorable, exciting, dangerous things I've ever seen a band. I still can visualize Rick Allen, sans an arm, coming down, for about 3 or 4 minutes. It was a concession line. I'll put it that way. It was a concession line of things that he wanted to accomplish before he went back up on stage, if you know what I mean. And I just sat there with my jaw dropped to the floor. And of course, afterwards, after the concert, we all kind of meandered out with our heads down, like, you know, it's like leaving Norm's at like 7 o'clock in the morning. You're like, what the hell just happened here? It was the most amazing situation I've ever been in. But I'd have to say Def Leppard Adrenalized. What's your next one?
Yeah, I'm going to go with a guy named Charlie Daniels, Band. So I was at Alabama, the band Alabama, the Roll On Tour. And it was like 83, 84, something like that. They were great. So I go to this concert. They were great. The following year, they came back to our town in Virginia. And I was like, oh, God, you know, it was so great. My dad was in the radio business and had a country music station. And so we were promoting the show. Getting tickets was not hard. So I was like, oh, I really want to go back and see them. Well, the next year, Alabama, they're wearing like neon shirts and stuff. It wasn't quite Alabama the way that I was used to. And but Charlie Daniels opened for them. And I'm telling you, for a guy that opened the show, he blew the roof off the place.
Wow.
He absolutely blew the roof off the place. I had no expectation. You know, all I knew was Devil Went Down to Georgia, and everybody knew that song, and everybody was waiting on that song. But, I mean, you would have thought he was the headlining show, and he stole the show. He's fantastic.
That's fantastic. I'm going to go with my number three and keep it short and sweet. Steely Dan, the BJCC Concert Hall. The night before the show, I didn't have any tickets. I called a good friend of mine, Jay Wilson, who's with New Era and now Live Nation, said, I need some tickets for Steely Dan. I'll pay for him. Just let me know. He goes, I'll have them for you at will call. I show up with a good friend. I had the four necessary things to make a great show. I had a good buzz. I was with a very good friend. He put me on the second row, and it was one of the best shows I've ever seen. They played every song. I'm sitting there. They were asking the audience, what do you want to hear? What do you want to hear? And I kept saying, My Old School. And he kept looking over. We were on the second row. You could put your feet on the stage. He kept looking over at me, shaking his head no. And then the last song they played, they'd start with that piano at the beginning of My Old School, and it was Steely Dan. So that was by far one of my favorite concerts. What's your number three?
Number three, I'm going to go. It was college. It was the Electric Ballroom, and there's similar to my last story about Alabama. I went to see a band called The Offspring, and you know The Offspring. Mm-hmm. They got a lot of popular music. So I go see The Offspring, but they had an opener, and it's this old punk rock band called Rancid. Rancid, who I wasn't sure I'd ever heard of. And I ended up buying three of their CDs back, you know, when we bought CDs and albums. I ended up buying three of them after this show, because they were so good. They were so good. They were just all over the stage. They were hyper. They were focused. They sounded great. And I was introduced to this whole sound that I'd never heard, and just their energy level was off the charts. And they were, you know, they're this old British, and that, you know, I was like, I'm not sure if I'm in some dark bar in London or, I know this is Knoxville, but it was so cool, and they were so fun. And all of my buddies that went with me, we all just left going like, man, The Offspring was just very average, but man, these other guys were incredible. They were fun. So there you go. There's a secret sleeper there for you, Rancid.
I like that. My number one, and again, it wasn't one of the greatest shows I've ever seen, but it had just a huge impact on my life. It was 1990 down at Lynn Park when we had City Stages. I talked about this on another show yesterday. Chuck Berry was coming to town, and
yeah,
I was always a Chuck Berry fan, right? But I also realized that Chuck Berry influenced so many of my other favorite rock bands, AC/DC, Eddie Van Halen, Ritchie Blackmore. And so I almost felt, I've always been a historical guy. You know, when I got into radio, I wanted to learn about the Marconi. I wanted to learn about Ship to Shore. I wanted to learn everything about radio and how I got started so I could pay homage to the people that that blazed the trail for me to have this wonderful career I had. So I felt the need to bring Chuck Berry on stage. Well, I again called the concert promoter and they're like, you know, we have an oldie station in town. They're going to do the stage announcements. And I said, please let me bring Chuck Berry on stage. It felt like a calling to me, almost like I needed to become a priest or something. And so I said, they said, I tell you what, the oldie station doesn't care. You can do it. I said, great. So I get down there and it's right there over Lynn Park. I don't know how many thousands of people, 15, 20,000 people are waiting to go. And I always got nervous. I almost felt like I was Barbra Streisand. I almost felt like I had to puke every time I went on stage. It gave me my edge, and I felt good about that. Well, Chuck pulls up backstage in this, it's a piece of crap car. I don't know what it was back in 1990. I don't know. It was a nasty car. He's got this beautiful white girl sitting in the front seat of the car with her. She looked like she could have been 20 or 21. He was in his 60s. And he gets out of the car and leaves the car running, which is what he does. And I found out later after all this, he got paid $75,000 to do the show. So he gets out of his car. You must pay him $75,000 in cash. He puts that cash in the car. The woman stays in the car with it and the car stays running during the entire show. And then when he gets done with his 45 to 50 minute set, he goes back down the car and takes off and he's driving. So that's you're thinking to yourself, it's Chuck Berry. He should have a limo. He should have something going on. So I get down to the bottom of the stage. The concert promoter says, you're going to bring him on. I said, I'm Tony Curry. I said, what do you guys get up there? Say who you are, your radio station. Don't need to mention any labels and just get off the stage as fast as you possibly can. I said, great. So I ran up. There was about 30 steps that came off the back. I ran up on stage, said, I'm Tony Curry. We had just started our radio station on Christmas Day in 1988. So we were only about a year and a half old, but we were taking the world by storm. We were the number one classic rock station in the country. I get up there and mention, I hear the crowd. I mentioned a couple of things about the radio station. And then I said, ladies and gentlemen, here's Chuck Berry. I turn to my left and I run off the stage. Well, I'm getting about halfway down the stairs and I hear this chorus of boos that is like unlike anything I've ever heard. And I thought, what in the world's going on? And the concert promoter's at the bottom of the stairs pointing me back up. He goes, get back up there, get back up there, get back up there. And I thought, maybe Chuck's not ready. Maybe something happened. I run back up on stage. Well, while I ran around and turned to my left and ran off the stage, Chuck had come around to my right and was standing right next to me when I walked off stage and extended his hand and I left him hanging.
Oh, no.
And they were booing me because I left Chuck Berry. And when I ran back up on stage, Chuck was still standing there with his hand extended to nothing. And I walked back up there and I thought, oh my gosh, I am so sorry. And I shook his hand. He goes into Johnny B. Goode and that's it. So the story doesn't end there. So the entire night I had Chuck Berry Live from London, the album. And it's hanging on my wall right in front of me right now. And I had this album. I get down, I spent the entire concert, the 45 or 50 minutes behind. He gets off the stage, he runs to his car, he's in the car and people are screaming and hey, Chuck and blah, 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 blah. And I make eye contact with him from about 30 or 40 yards. And I said, would you please sign this? And he said, no. And he's in the car. It's already fired up. He's trying to make his way through the crowd. And I said, man, I'm the one that brought you on stage. Would you please sign this? He got out of the car, walked through the crowd, took the Sharpie, signed Chuck Berry, the date, and with a smiley face, got back in the car and took off. And that's so good. Yeah, it'll be something that everything that I ever wanted in a concert presentation was there. So that's my number
one. Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. So
my last one is God rest his soul, Prince. I took my wife to see Prince.
I never saw him live.
About a guy.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw him twice. And we saw him at an arena show. And the first time, I mean, again, he can play the guitar like any rock star that you've ever enjoyed listening to. He can play the piano like he's, you know, like this virtuoso Elton John type ability. And then, you know, and he can dance and he's got such a beautiful sound with his voice. You know, he's just a great vocalist. And very unique. And, you know, he has got this cool factor to him, this very mysterious cool factor about him that most people just don't have.
Yeah.
And you can't decide, do you love it or do you hate it, right? He's aloof. He's mysterious. He seems quiet. He seems like he'd be difficult, though I've heard actually that he was fantastic when you worked with him as a member of his band or in studio. I've heard stories and interviews of, you know, people that met him that were just like, oh, just, it was just an amazing experience to work with Prince. Well, I saw him a second time at a concert, at a halftime concert. This is such a name drop story here, but it was at the halftime of the Super Bowl in Miami. Mm-hmm. And my old teammate, Peyton Manning, was playing for the Colts, and he played in his first Super Bowl, which they won against the Chicago Bears. Before I'm there with my father-in-law, my brother-in-law, my two brother-in-laws, and so we go down there, and it's beautiful weather the whole time we're there. And right as we were leaving the hotel, there's, I guess because my father-in-law's old, he's got the Weather Channel on, of all things. He's watching weather. Except, and so he's watching the weather, and it says, the local forecast said, hey, listen, it's going to be a beautiful night for the game. It's so exciting. And those of you that are going, there is a very light misting, cloud set moving north of the stadium. It's really never even going to get to the stadium, and it'll pass by quickly, but it is just going to be a great night. And I said to them, I was like, why don't we each take a hand towel so that we can wipe our seats off if they get wet? Yeah. What a smart idea. Yeah. So we get there and we're watching. I want to get in early. I want to watch all the warm up. And that cloud set hits, and it's like this heavy, misty fog. Well, it never stops. It never stopped. And then it did turn to a light rain, and we weren't prepared for it. And it was like we were as wet as if we had jumped in a lake. We were soaked to the bone. And halftime comes, and we know Prince is going to play. And I'm like, I'm not sure Prince is going to play. I mean, but he came out, and he played like four songs, including Purple Rain. And it was raining steadily when he played. And I don't know what it is about that, but it was just fabulous. And everybody was just on their feet cheering. Well, here's the funny part. So, I don't know, a couple of years later, I'm at a birthday party for a friend. And Peyton is there. And I was like, man, you missed a great concert that night. I know you were in the game and you were in the locker room. And I was like, dude, you missed a great show. And he goes, let me tell you about this. He says, one of my buddies, who's like an equipment manager for the Colts, was out in the kind of that lower concourse area while we were at halftime. And he said that he just watched all this happen, which is that the person that put the whole production together, he's like, all right, you're up next, and cue this, and the group, and the dancers going, all right, get the stage, he's doing all that stuff, and that Prince is nowhere to be found, and it's raining, and people are like, oh my gosh, Prince is going to totally no show the Super Bowl. His band is there, and this guy is like frantically running around to the band members. Where is he? And this equipment manager said that the band is just like real cool. They're like, they're not even really answering the guy. They got sunglasses on. They're like, whatever, man. And they're not even responding. Well, it's like, it's 2 minutes to the show. He's got to go on in 2 minutes. 1:50. Where is he? And he's counting down. It's 1 minute. Where's Prince? 30 seconds. And he goes, it's 30 seconds. You're just going to have to go on without him. You're going to have to go on without him. Oh. And he's just, this poor guy is a wreck. And the equipment manager said that seriously, with like 10 seconds to go, he's like, all right, go, go, go. A limousine pulls up next to the tunnel, and they're like, the manager goes, I don't even know how the limo got that close to the stadium, right? Because all the security.
Yeah.
He goes, this limo pulls up, driver gets out, opens the door, Prince gets out of the car, never breaks stride. A dude opens up a guitar case, hands him that white guitar.
Wow.
He never breaks stride. He grabs the guitar and walks right out like it was choreographed to the absolute second. And this poor guy was like having a heart attack. Oh my God, I'm going to get fired. It's the Super Bowl. This is my big chance. And Prince got out of the car, walks in, and then just went and killed him.
That's a great story.
That's so funny.
That is a great story, man. Great conscious, dude. We could do, we went an hour today, man. That's fantastic. I love it. We'll do it again next week, man. Check out Mark, of course, on social media at @UAB_AD. And of course, you can also check out UABsports.com and hear our show at least 5 times on the TKR app every single week and wherever you get your podcast. Mark, a great conversation. We'll get up next week, man.
Love you, man. See ya.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.